Welcome, one and all, across the Alpha Quadrant and beyond to Lower Decks, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek, your official, unofficial Star Trek podcast. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hailing frequencies are open, Pete.
We doing sci-fi stuff today? Lower Decks, a Star Trek podcast by Fantastic Geek for episode 203. We'll always have Tom Paris. Comes to you now via Cation Libido Post.
And just a bit of fleet news before we launch into the episode. Pete, I saw on the socials media this was the 800th episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, after they had had an 800th episode at the end of 2020, beginning of the year. And I know there was some discussion, they're counting movies. But yeah, they made a whole thing about it this week.
I know. I saw the thing on social media. I'm like, that's awesome. I have to admit, Pete, I kind of had forgotten about us having a very similar discussion back in, it's not quite the before times, but let's say back in the winter. So, okay, 800 episodes. That's great. That's awesome. And I go on Memory Alpha, which, as you alluded to, Pete, Memory Alpha counts the movies as part of the, you know, Star Trek stories that have been released, film stories, for lack of a better term, episode, if we consider the movies an episode, blah, blah, blah. And by Memory Alpha's count, we'll always have Tom Paris is the 800th four episode. But Pete, celebrating Star Trek is always a good thing. How about that?
Well, with Star Trek Day coming up, we've now got some news about what's going to happen then.
We do. And Pete, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you this. I'll tell our listeners this. First of all, are we going to podcast Star Trek Day? You betcha. The times are a little favorable for Pacific, for the Pacific time zone. So I suspect we're not going to podcast Star Trek Day on Star Trek Day. So probably the next day. That's because, Pete, there's a robust schedule. There are, by StarTrek.com's numbers, there are 13 panels. That includes the introduction panel with Jeff Russo and playing some live music. This will be obviously streamed free to StarTrek.com, but also presented live for those in attendance. Pete, of the 13 panels, you have some of the new stuff. You got some Prodigies, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, and Picard. Interspersed with that, after the welcome remarks from Will Wheaton and Misha Burton, you also have some legacy moments. Pete, listen to this. There's going to be a legacy moment with Cirok Lofton from Deep Space Nine. That's going to be 5 minutes long. There's going to be a legacy moment with Anthony Montgomery from Enterprise. That's going to be 5 minutes long. There's going to be a legacy moment, Voyager, where Garrett Wang talks about his time. That's going to be 5 minutes long. And then there's going to be two more legacy moments. One is the internet's uncle, George Takei, talking about TOS. That will be 5 minutes long. And then there's going to be one more legacy moment. Again, it all kind of interspersed throughout the day with my boyhood hero, LeVar Burton, talking about his time with TNG. So, Pete, each of these people, Cirok Lofton, Anthony Montgomery, Garrett Wang, George Takei, and LeVar Burton, each getting 5 whole minutes to talk about how great Star Trek is. I feel like those guys all have something in common aside from Star Trek. But your thoughts, Pete?
Well, I mean, certainly the platform, I think, worthy in terms of doing that with Star Trek Day. I think 5 minutes, given the idea of diversity and all that Star Trek stands for, I'm surprised it's not like a panel. Historically, Star Trek Day, and then what they've done now with First Contact Day, you know, that Star Trek has 2 calendar holidays each year, essentially to push content and product. They've done very well at incorporating that. This reads strangely.
I would agree. The panels about the newer shows, Prodigy, Discovery, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, and Picard, those are 20 to 25 minutes long, which, as we've said before, in this age of online panels, we prefer to sit through an hour-long panel in person at New York Comic Con and so forth. something shorter than that seems to be better for the home experience. Always take more versus less. But I mean, Pete, we're getting the legacy stuff. Okay, it's shorter and it's all minority men. So I guess that's the minority men corner or something for the legacy moments. But okay. For the newer shows, getting 20 or 25 minutes or so, there's also going to be a Roddenberry legacy panel as well. So some of my quibbles aside, we're getting a little from every facet of Star Trek, and that's a good thing.
And I'm sure, and as essentially been promised, there will be footage. I'm sure we're going to see something from Strange New Worlds for the first time. I'm pretty confident we're going to get a Discovery date and some more Picard. So our cup will runneth over on, Wednesday, September 8th.
Yes, that's when Star Trek Day and all the panels will be, and I'm assuming we'll podcast it the next day or so. Flexibility, always appreciated. With that, though, Pete, let's get into the ready rundown.
Program complete. Enter when ready.
Boimler is welcomed back to the Cerritos, finding that his papusa can't be ordered. He's not recognized in the system. He can just tell Billups, but hey, he'll be meeting Tom Paris today, and maybe he'll sign Boimler's Paris plate. He's a Voy fan. Boimler can't just use the turbolift since he's not in the system. He moves to the Jefferies tubes, vertical style. He's almost to the bridge and just needs to cross the catwalk. His trip is interrupted by Lieutenant Paris pushing buttons on the bridge. Boimler is singed and dirty, caught in the tubes, but the Paris plate tells him to find a solution. It's the fumes. Boims finally drops onto the bridge, looking like a Kazon, and is attacked by Paris as such. Meanwhile, Tendi, always a B-plot character, is looking to hustle so that she can show Dr. Tana how good she is. That said, Tana is scratching like a junkie and needs Tendi to get a family heirloom on Quaylor 2, so go get it. And Tendi is going to bring Mariner, since, you know, they've never missioned together. They should switch it up more, and they get slushies and listen to Klingon acid punk. It's amazing what you can learn with a friend. As for the heirloom, it's a wooden box, which Mariner wants to open. It's a wooden Cajun libido post, like Pon Farr. They fiddle with it and break it. They broke the face. Oh, and Mariner worked with Worf on DS9 before the Cerritos, which was after the Keto. They end up going to Starbase Earhart to get it fixed, but they gotta pay up. A little Dom Jot hustling, and the Nausicaans aren't too happy, and they smash the post head. Tendi needs to be her best, and always works to go above the reputation of Orions as pirates and thieves. Though, her cousin does work in a thieves' den and a pirate outpost. Let's go. Mariner just needs to green it up first. They're deep in Orion territory, and Mariner doesn't mind the looks of cousin Donnie. Mariner's into bad boys, bad girls, bad non-binary babes, and so forth. What Mariner doesn't know is Tendi's first name is Devana, and Mariner's found out as being human. False green! High up, Mariner hands the bag, but Tendi drops it to facilitate their escape, and escape they do. Turns out, Mariner keeps things close to the vest, so she doesn't have friends to lose. Though Mariner's ramming the shuttle into the Cerritos. That's the cover for the broken post, and Mariner takes the blame with Ransom and T'Ana, the latter of which just needed the box for cat box stuff? Meanwhile, Shax is back, kind of just like that. Mariner notes bridge officers always come back. But how, Rutherford asks, how? Time ribbon? Transporter buffer? Katra? Later, it's still bugging Rutherford, who overhears Shax reflecting on the darkness, while setting up a racquetball sesh with Billups. Lieutenant J.G. Cody asks how Shax came back, and that's a huge no-no. Rutherford later is overwhelmed with theories. Dyson Sphere, Nexus Christmas? He must know. Baby Bear is ready to hear. And Shax notes saving Rutherford was his duty. Silence on the topic is to keep others from haunting details about scientific depravity. You see, first upon death, your soul goes to the Black Mountain, and so forth. In the brig, Mariner's being visited by Tendi as they talk Klingon acid rock. Boimler comes by, recognized by the computer now, sporting a Tom Paris black eye. Rutherford's there too. As for how Shax came back, Rutherford sweats and says perhaps it's best to not know that horrible things can happen to good people. Cut to Klingon music to end the episode.
Red alert. All hands stand to battle stations.
Pete, with that incoming threat analysis, I almost feel like it's season 3 of Discovery. We're talking about the Orion pirates as being so, so bad.
Yeah, and headlined there by Cousin Da'ani. Great use of the, apostrophe there to make it all alien. I like the pushback too on the pirate culture. You know, first you have Mariner, talking like a pirate, and that's not who they are. And then, the running trope of how much Tendi attempts to distance herself from racial identities, her species, in terms of the way they act, that, all Orion women are dancers and temptresses, and then all the men are thieves and pirates.
I think, too, the show does a very deft job pointing out the whole false green, isn't that what the episode calls it? The whole false greening, yes, of Mariner. I think, one can say that such things in the real world are not appropriate, have never been appropriate, and there's an evolved sense of its appropriateness now, one would hope, in all quarters. However, this is sci-fi, so you get to maneuver a little bit there. It's like simultaneously meta back to us in the audience, and it's also just internally consistent for the world of Star Trek as well. Because again, you kind of go, "Ooh, are they on thin ice?" And Pete, they're on the ice. It's not thin, but it's they're on skates, and it was entertaining.
Yeah, and to think too, the way that they let it play out in this episode, that, okay, we have the discovery that Mariner is actually human, and previously Tendi had said they'd kill you just for being human, and then the fight and the escape there, playing that out more fully fleshed as bad guys as opposed to the other threat on the list here.
The Nausicaans, of course. I mean, Pete, we can all agree that Nausicaans are always bad, right? I mean, one doesn't say, where in Star Trek is the Nausicaan, the Nausicaan poet, the Nausicaan lover? It's just, there they are being Nausicaans at the Dom Jot table.
Is it me, or have we only ever seen them in watering holes?
I think you are correct. I would maybe add to that in the recreation of the watering hole in the Q space when young Picard was stabbed. But that was a de facto watering hole.
Right.
Look, for as enlightened as Star Trek can be, sometimes you need the evil mustachioed villains, and sometimes it's the Romulans, and sometimes it's the Nausicaans, and so on and so on. And it just works.
Yeah, I mean, they're appropriately scary and menacing, and we come to associate them with that. It's funny in that, we're 3 episodes into this season, and though the Packlids don't appear for the first time, they're mentioned again. So this ongoing threat there, but, we've taken a holdover species like the Packlid, and now tried to make them a larger threat than the bumbling, buffoons they've been in the past. Yet the Nausicaans remain, hey, and you go into a bar and the guy with, claws coming out of his face, ooh, watch out for them. Don't cheat them.
Indeed, Pete, it seems like most Nausicaan encounters in Star Trek do not end up well. Let's use those sensors to analyze some theories. First one from me, Pete. Will we ever get Mariner's full backstory, you know, the revelation that she was on Deep Space Nine with Worf, or is the tension of her mysterious backstory, is that meant to kind of wash over the whole series?
I think as much as the story needs the bits of her work history in Starfleet in the past, they'll give it to you. Okay. So they brought back the idea that she was on the Keto. It's the first time she's mentioned as having been on Deep Space Nine. I know there were a lot of, is it purists, Matt? Am I entering the neutral zone if I say that? The years and Worf being on Deep Space Nine before he left to become an ambassador and yada, yada, yada. It was a throwaway line, man. Okay. She ran over, by the way, how do you run over? What is there on Deep Space Nine we've ever seen that would run over a Klingon knife?
Well, and your observation raises a good point, which is even if the show is intending it to be an honest moment, she could also just be telling a fib. I mean, you know, and it's not that mm-hmm. she's a wildly untrustworthy character, but I mean, let's see, Pete. Pete, I want you to enter the 2380s Pete in Starfleet mentality. Okay, are you there?
I'm always.
Okay. Pete, who's the most famous Klingon ever to be in Starfleet?
Let me guess here. Kalar.
No, that might be second. You know, I mean, just my point being, like, the next generation people and Janeway and Voyager's whole, they're gone and they come back and all that. You know, they're just as famous for them as they are for us. So everybody, of course, everybody knows who Worf is. You know, it's like, you know, true or not, she might just be throwing out the name of the most famous Klingon in Starfleet ever, who spent part of his time on the vaunted Enterprise and part of his time in the vaunted, you know, the vaunted Deep Space Nine. So it, you know, Pete, you did not cross into the neutral zone. Maybe you approached it, and just point being, it's okay to have it both ways. Not everything needs to be canon.
Wow, I might get through this episode without using my neutral zone credentials.
Pete, does Lower Decks get points off for Shaxx coming back, or points added for being self-referential to Trek, given as how, in retrospect, so many people come back from the dead?
Well, I mean, this is obviously the biggest area of substance theory-wise in this week's episode. They get points, and then the number of ways that they reference that people have been brought or can be brought, and I think it's a game of what we haven't mentioned will be the way that he was brought back.
Okay, so you're excluding that long list. Do we ever find out?
Transporter clone. He doesn't obviously have a Katra. He's not Vulcan. He didn't come from the Mirror Universe. He wasn't rebuilt by the Borg. He's not a future son from an alternate timeline. He was not a Genesis deviced. He was not time ribboned and or nexused, where it is always Christmas. My favorite was the microscopic, and it's a new one, a microscopic civilization brought him back to life in order to harness him with a tiny Dyson sphere. That, I think, was the cutest one.
Will we ever get a definitive answer, or does it not matter?
I think we will get an answer. Star Trek matters to Mike McMahon and the writing room on this show, in a way that they can have fun with it, in a way too. I mean, think of the heart and the pseudo serious stuff we got out of season one. So to think that they would bring him back and not in some way address it, I love the delaying of, well, we don't talk about it. And bridge crew are always coming back all the time. And then when Rutherford finally gets him to talk through it and the stuff that comes up there, I mean, I don't know how deep you went in terms of reading it with the subtitles, because it gets a little hard to hear. I mean, let's deal with the text. So, you know, there's that lieutenant junior grade who gets reassigned just because he brings it up. And then Shax cries briefly and then recovers, almost as if he was feigning it. But then he says he's still having flashbacks. And then to Rutherford in the turbo lift, he says that they're really sparing dark truths about scientific depravity. Is that cloning? Is that something, you know, obviously we haven't mentioned, that would haunt him once he knew? But the out there is that Rutherford's memory has been compromised in the past, so he could find out and then be able to decompress from that. And then the ultimate explanation, well, death comes first, which was a great line. Then you go to the Black Mountain, which is a spiritual battleground where your soul has to fight three faceless apparitions of your father. So if they're faceless, how do you know your father? The surviving faceless apparition of your father makes you eat your own heart.
I love how this show lives in an area of Star Trek where all the other series have brushed up against, where some of these things don't matter. You know, some of the most ridiculous things of all the series, and maybe the seriousness has increased throughout the years, but you can just kind of get away with this stuff. And then, as you say, again, Pete, kind of similar to comments made earlier, like, if this is just Shax's way of explaining, okay, so be it. Or if this is actually the secret canonical answer, but Rutherford's going to forget it because of his memory thing, like, there's like this workaround where it can both exist and not exist. And I don't know, that's really freeing. And not just, you know, all the anti-Star Trek people and blah, blah, blah that are increasingly in the rearview mirror amongst the current fandom. But, you know, it's just, you can kind of just have the fun in this where it this show counts and doesn't count at the same time.
Well, he says in conversation to the other officer in engineering, that place did take a lot out of me. So in retrospect, it's implied he did really go to a place and fight faceless apparitions of his father. The other hysterical thing that comes via Rutherford's imagination of all the different ways in which he was brought back is the line about T'Pol's hair that one year.
Yeah, I mean, when in doubt, Mike McMahon's love of Star Trek is what shines through. And I'm sure, you know, the love of Star Trek that many, if not all, of the people under him have as well. I mean, this is a fun episode. This is a solid episode. And to see your list of baddies in the previous segment, it kind of was like, I went back and looked over my notes and said, on a certain level, there really are no baddies. Like, what's the baddie driving the Boimler story? There's not an other. It's just, you know, Boimler wants to get to a, you know, there's been a technological malfunction. What's the baddie with the Tendi story? All right, well, the Orions are doing their Orion thing in Orion turf, and then somebody who's not welcome sneaks in pretending to be one of them. Okay, that's cause of provocation. The Shax mystery, I mean, Rutherford wants to find out. He's ultimately he's respectful for most of that story arc. Then he finally asks somebody in Shax that he has a greater link with, you know, Rutherford, the baby bear and all that, versus the lieutenant junior grade who has no place to ask. This is just an episode driven on the characters here. And that's almost its own theory ponderance, that you have a story that is without us versus them, and it works because it's about us with us, if you will.
It is spurious just from the context. So Lieutenant Kayshon is on the Cerritos still. So wasn't he the new security officer? So it makes you question, and it's not a situation where Rutherford is imagining Shax. They see him, the other lower deckers see him as well. So I thank you that they have Fred Tatasciore to still continue to deliver this character and others. and that they could explore both, that they have the Temerian that I want more, and I think can lend itself to, you know, more hilarity in terms of the situations with the way that they speak and whatever else canonically they can add in terms of that species.
I'm kind of reminded of, you know, in season one, our discussions were, you know, well, who knows about Mariner's mother? They floated a thing in the first episode, then they didn't talk about it in the second episode. They're not doing your standard, serialized story of you do an introduction and then you feed it. And then in the fourth episode or the fifth or whatever, that's when there's the payoff. They didn't feed the theory this week. I mean, maybe same thing here. Maybe we're supposed to walk away saying, but you did officially replace him, and then you did officially bring him back. This is not a case where, as you say, Pete, you know, we're not saying, well, it was only Rutherford. No, it's clear it was all these other people. This is probably the discussion that we're meant to have. And is there a definitive answer? I mean, maybe not until they say, and look, now Shax is, you know, has moved up a rank, or he's got a different position, or, you know, whatever it is that it feeds the story, doesn't, I don't know, feed the org chart.
It's funny, and it makes me think. So I recently binged through all the episodes of Cobra Kai to get caught up, and then, you know, Ed Asner, who appears a handful of times on the show, passes away the day after I finish or get caught up. But, you know, and we talk Emmy stuff on our podcast, Cobra Kai is a nominee for Outstanding Comedy Series. The pilot may be a comedy. I don't know how much you've watched it, Matt. I'm sure our listeners, there's quite a few who have seen it. That show does not resemble a comedy much anymore at all. And, you know, I watched this episode of Lower Decks, and I think in a similar way. And it's funny too, because, you know, with the screenwriting, the unproduced screenwriting that I've done to this point, it's really like a gun to your head. You're either a drama person or you're a comedy person, and you can go from one into the other, but not from the other into the other, because it literally becomes an issue of agents and managers don't know how to market you. If you do that, you can go from comedy into drama. You cannot go from drama into comedy. And having written both, and, you know, for me, it's a question of, well, what can, you know, further my interests in the industry and, you know, result in some opportunities. But this show, and we've talked before how Mike McMahon is going to be somebody, one, he's already been given more Star Trek to play with, and how we speculate that over time, you know, it's going to lead to more opportunities there. They know what they have in him, and that this is not just the Star Trek yuck yuck burp and fart show.
Yeah, and through that lens, to kind of, you know, I mean, this is not a silly episode. There's some silliness associated with the false green and all of that. However, I think that in a lighter drama, you could get away with that. Like, you know, like a Once Upon a Time or something like that. Maybe not a one-for-one example, but, you know, something that's not, you know, Law and Order really digging deep or ripping the headlines, that kind of thing. I mean, all of this could work in live action. None of it is kind of that animated hilarity. I don't know. I mean, you even have me wondering, Pete, I'm thinking of all these great quote unquote comedy shows. Like maybe you have comedy writers that realize that there's not a market anymore for three camera, you know, speed up the chocolate thing, Lucy, you know, and they're writing funny dramas, funny shorter dramas. Cause again, that's kind of increasingly the space that, we haven't put it in those words, but that's kind of the space that Lower Decks inhabits, where it's an upbeat, lighter show. But, I mean, you know, sadness when Shax was killed off, to the point that when he comes back, you know, essentially my question about, you know, do we get points off for him coming back? It essentially was, is that undoing the drama of his death? Now, of course, again, through the lens of Star Trek, oh, well, if we're going to say yes, then we need to say, oh, well, they, you know, they brought Spock back the movie after he died, and on and on and on. And, you know, it's happened so many times that we get kind of the uber reference here. But, you know, this is a short animated drama that sometimes is silly.
Yeah. And I think of, you know, we just mentioned Ed Asner. I mentioned Ed Asner before. You know, you go from the Mary Tyler Moore Show to, you know, Lou Grant to a drama. And obviously, let's not for a moment mistake that Lower Decks is the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and eventually this is going to become a drama with Rutherford and Shax, you know, and the mysteries of how he was resurrected. But, you know, I think of Rick and Morty for, you know, Mike McMahon's experience with that and the dramatic storylines they've gotten into there. So I think it's very much baked into the premise, and all these serious scientific tropes that get brought up on this show to be able to have some fun with, you know, wow, you know, they never do explain to the rest of the crew, hey, so Spock died, but he has this eternal soul, and we went to bring him back, and now, you know, he's back. It's all good.
What other theories do you have?
So Boimler is not recognized by the Cerritos. Bradward Boimler, having returned here, chalked up to some kind of malfunction. But I think the question would be, and, you know, much in line with the Shaq stuff, do we get our answer this week? Is it something that's coming? Billy Boimler, would he have been recognized?
I will take the reactions of Boimler's crewmates. I will take them at face value and say Boimler was removed from the system because they were tightening security and there was going to be no, you know, hanging logins for those who no longer serve on the ship. And I get that, you know, we need to have a bit of business for Boimler here and, you know, him crossing with Tom Paris and the whole, you know, that whole story. I will take the crewmates what they said. Had he just gone to engineering and said, here's my issue, or had he, I guess maybe going to engineering would be difficult since the doors aren't opening for him, but, you know, had he just made the right person aware in, you know, Cerritos IT, if you will, it would have been 2 seconds. Okay, boom, bing, bang, boom. You're in the system. Your badge is in the system. I don't want to go so far as to say, you know, it's just a machination of the story, even though on a certain level it is. I think that what we see is Boimler saying, no, everything's fine. I'm super confident everything works out great for Boimlers just like me, versus go see the guy in engineering and say, I'm having login issues, and he'll go, beep, boop, boop, great, there you go. Go get a hot breakfast of anything that you want.
Did Boimler eat the bonsai tree?
Pete, I'm going to say no, and that contributed to him being a little too focused, you know, had the horse blinders on and whatnot, and had he had a proper breakfast that had some, you know, that there's maybe a little protein heavy, help fuel that brain, then he would have said, hey, here's the issue, and I can both get into the turbo lift and see Tom Paris and get my signature without any trouble.
We got the gag that was incoming with the commemorative plates, and obviously that Tom Paris was going to be appearing at some point in this season. But these commemorative plates, real things that, you know, listen, like what you like and collect what you collect, that people collect those, and that they ape this for the show, that Boimler collects plates of Starfleet officers in that universe, and the way it figures into this episode.
I've never understood the appeal of plate collection. My grandmother had a Norman Rockwell or Norman Rockwell Christmas plate series. I don't remember quite which. Maybe there was definitely plates. I might be confusing it with Norman Rockwell Christmas ornaments or something like that. But point being, I don't get it. But at least if you want to be doing slices of Americana, okay, fine. Star Trek plates, I get even less. But I remember distinctly And I'm sure I've seen them at many conventions, but like one of the first conventions you and I went to there in Cherry Hill, New Jersey and whatnot, just seeing, you know, guy who had plates on sale and whatnot, just being like, it's 2010 and there's your Picard plate from circa 1996 or whatever. Like, I don't get it then. I don't get it now, but you know, collect what you want to collect and get signed by whom what you want to get signed, I suppose.
All right, phaser to your head, Matt. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I'm going to ask you a question.
I'm going to speak from the heart and go.
One. Okay?
Okay.
No middle ground. Phaser to your head. Voy or noy?
What's noy?
It means no.
Oh. I'll go for voy. I mean, I think there's... Voyager's not in my top half. I'm probably overly unhappy with the Voyager finale, which I think was just Rick Berman and company saying, oh, I'm tired. Let's just make a new submarine thing for UPN or whatever. Who cares?
But are we gonna refer to Voyager as this culture of, well, every Star Trek show needs to have a three-letter acronym because the original series and the animated series and the Next Generation, I do not use them.
Well, listen,
I have read Voy for years on the internet. I will not say Voy to refer to the show. I love that Lower Decks, they've done this before with TOS, you know, those old scientists. Because obviously you can't get that to mean anything. Granted, we've been in the Next Generation Deep Space Nine Voyager era. Mariner was on Deep Space Nine. She does not refer to it as DS9. She calls it Deep Space Nine. We've not had anybody say TNG. Enterprise uses ENT. Can that be a double dip in an episode? You know, oh, in the TNG era when I was on ENT.
To me, Voy is too short. I mean, you have the lovely cadence of threes in TOS, TNG, DS9, or Deep Space Nine, because it's all kind of monosyllabic. Enterprise. To say Voyager is three syllables as well. So Pete, I'm not counting typed characters as much as I'm counting syllables, and I'm okay saying Voyager.
The theme that Boimler was humming was distinctly the Voyager theme. So apparently in universe, that song's been heard.
Yeah, and I think it's the kind of thing where if you want to Star Wars ice cream man it, you can come up with answers. If you want to just say it's a wink and a nod, that's okay too. I mean, I don't mean to repeat myself, but we're kind of back to it both counts and it doesn't count. Like, it's clearly a nod to everybody at home. If you need to, if you're only going to feel good about Boimler humming that when, you know, IDC comes out with the Lower Decks graphic novel 5 years from now to do the backstory of the symphony that became the this, that then that, and then when they came back to San Francisco and Janeway was an admiral on the symphony, if that's going to make you feel good about it, fine. Along the way, hey, the best Star Trek theme out of all these 55 years, the best Star Trek theme got a little love on Lower Decks this week. I'm fine with that.
The Mariner Tendi team up for the first time here. Who knew it would take 13 episodes?
I'm completely sympathetic to the idea of, you know, launching a show from nothing into something, as Mike McMahon did, figuring out what works, what doesn't for 10 episodes. Then you have COVID impacting it as a very real production. Clearly animation and over the internet and whatnot, that was more possible than, you know, I don't know, let's all build the parts in our house and then put it together virtually. You know, that's not going to work. But I like that the show, A, is interested in mixing these characters up in genuinely new combinations, not just kind of a pre-scripted, let's come up with new adventures for our two leads, Mariner and Boimler, who can have the A story, and then Rutherford and Tendi can come along and be part of the A story, and then sometimes it'll be, you know, bridge characters will be the B story. To look back over those 10 episodes and go, hey, Star Trek is great, and representation is great, and oh my goodness, we didn't pair together the two main female characters to just go on a mission together and to get to know each other and to be successful. Instead, we had those female characters paired off with other characters, sometimes other female characters, which would be sources of conflict, like Mariner and Mom and so forth. The show is calling out its own oversight and fixing it and doing character service as well, because we love Tendi, we love Mariner, blah, blah, blah. I completely buy that Mariner is so in love with the Mariner presentation and her own awesomeness, and I never need to get close to people. Of course she doesn't know Tendi's first name. Mariner views herself... Mariner's a little narcissistic, which is different than narcissistic. But, you know, Mariner's narcissistic and gets
narcissism.
A little bit of... there you go. Gets a little comeuppance. And Pete, maybe the Nausicaans are metaphors for narcissism. I don't know. We'll have to dig deep on that one some other time.
You mentioned the merging of the characters. And here again, what the show does well in legacy characters, commercial characters like Quark and his franchise of bars, and now Vic Fontaine gets a neon call out alongside the creation of the show in the Zebulon Sisters.
Yeah, I mean, it's
I say this as I'm wearing my official Choo Choo shirt.
There you go. I don't know. It's both fan service and realistic within the world of the show. Of course, when Quark was finally able to catch his breath, you know, at the end of the seven seasons, of course he was going to think about franchising. Of course, as the barkeep at the crossroads of the galaxy and, you know, the wormhole and all this stuff, of course there's merchandising opportunities. He's as much yogurt from Spaceballs as he is his own character. So again, it's those things where the joke is funny, the realism makes sense.
And again, hiding it within humor, but there's serious sentiment behind it. Matt, we got hardcore confirmation that Beckett Mariner, she dates these people, she dates those people. I mean, yeah, they go into the joke of bad gender non-binary babes and even bad binars. Matt, who knew such a thing existed? The binars from the Next Generation have, you know, bad boys.
And you know what, Pete, I think, well, first of all, let me back up and say, with regards to this this particular topic in question, having dusted off the Paramount Plus subscription for Lower Decks, I've been going back and watching the last season of Discovery, and I don't know to what degree there's conversations at Star Trek HQ. I mean, clearly we see things like Picard introduces the Quelaat Malaat, and then there's a reference to them, or more than a reference, in Discovery, even though it's 900 some odd years later, you know, all that stuff. Star Trek, which historically has been lacking in diversity when it comes to sexual orientation and gender issues and things of that sort, to have put those topics as part of a major character movement last season in Discovery, I think we get the serious look at those topics, and somewhat through the Star Trek lens, somewhat just through, we're going to discuss it as it is. I think that then opens the door in Lower Decks here for it to be a throwaway. I mean, it's also Star Trek's way of saying, for Mariner, and by implication for Tendi, and for most of these people, you know, orientation and gender and all these things, like, nobody really cares. But the fact that we, you know, like, we can kind of joke about it now because we had the more serious discussion in Discovery, I think that's the right order to do it, versus like, haha, bad boys, bad girls, bad non-binary. Like, it's the right order. And yeah, now we can make a joke about it. And Pete, returning to my theme here of duality, I think it's a joke for us. Also, just kind of Mariner's personality diving on into whatever she wants to do. Yeah, I buy it that Mariner's had some really great escapades with bad boys, and she's had great escapades, emotional, physical, whatever, romantic, with bad girls and bad non-binary and bad binars. I buy it all.
And then you bring in, you reach back into the Voyager pantheon, speaking of baddie, for the Kazon as the butt of a joke here, and you have to wonder what Robert Duncan McNeil's reaction was when he was sent these lines, and he's got to, compare Boimler, who's tripping in a gas-filled Jefferies tube, and, you know, covered in oil, to look like what was the, you know, species that was the big threat initially on Voyager, and made here again the butt of a fairly funny joke.
Oh, very funny, in part because I don't think anybody saw it coming. You know, there is Boimler with, he looks just fine. Okay, there he is now, a little, the uniform's torn. Okay, here he is, worse for wear. Now the shirt's off, and on and on and on. It's only when he falls. I would even argue within the world of Lower Decks and its visual presentation, as soon as he stands up looking like that, I don't think you immediately say, oh, Kazon joke, here we come. It's only when identified as such where it's like, well done, show. You spent, you know, it's not a huge chunk of story time-wise, but you spent a lot of the 20 minutes to reach this joke, and it's really great stuff there.
We did get confirmation as well. It has been a calendar year that Tendi has been on Cerritos, so tucked into everything. And I mean, we even got a Chakotay bowl joke there at the end. We get these serious and even important details about the passage of time.
And indeed, Pete, I must confess, I'm sure, I don't know, and maybe this is my neutral zone incursion. It probably is, even though I would argue I'm just going up to it. But if there's a impulse engine misfire and I cross into it, then I'm using my one. I have not looked to see if there's people upset that Tom Paris is now a full lieutenant, because he was a lieutenant junior grade, except for when he got busted down to ensign and back to a lieutenant junior grade. I mean, it kind of makes sense, right? The guy comes back. He did a good job. Passage of time. Prove yourself. Get debriefed from your seven-year mission. What happens to your rank? It goes up in time. You did a great job, guy. Now you move from lieutenant junior grade non-pay because it's the Federation to lieutenant non-pay in the Federation. It all just works, Pete.
You did your voice. That definitely counts as your incursion for this episode. But speaking of incursions, Matt, we only encourage people to incur at patreon.com/fantasticgeek.
Indeed, Pete. Love that we are listener supported. And I know I say that, and I really do mean it. I just started listening to a new podcast done, Pete, by a professional talking about news stuff. It's the Elizabeth, what's her name, Theranos trial and whatnot. And like to hear somebody going, and then there was all sorts of scamming of investors. Music pause. Have you been feeling down lately? Do you need more kale? Well, we're sponsored by KaleCrunch.com. And it's like, I listen to other podcasts too, ones that are done by kind of folks like us, not professional people, where it's like, here we are, we're having fun with a movie. Can I talk to you about counselingapp.com? Like, you can hear that people... You can hear that, Pete, normal guys like us, they don't like when you got to talk about KaleCrunch.com or whatever. And the fact that we are listener supported, that's my point. The fact that the only ad we run is to say, hey, If you, dear listener, would like to help us out with the real-world costs that we do incur to get this to you, that help is appreciated. And we say it each week that we appreciate it. We say it as we also say, hey, if you're not there, please check out patreon.com/fantasticgeek. But it really is all from the heart, and it really means so much that we are listener-supported, and we don't need to lie to you about liking kale or not. Side note, I happen to like kale chips done in the oven. Pete?
I love kale. But I can't contribute this month. It takes just $1 a month to get you behind that door for all sorts of exclusives, early listens, things like that. Get yourself over to Apple Podcasts, where we could absolutely use a rating in seconds there out of 5 stars for the Lower Decks podcast by Fantastic Geek, or any of our Fleet with a PH of Star Trek podcasts, or the Family with also with a PH of Fantastic Geek podcasts. Don't forget, we're doing Marvel's What If right now. And a review would be even more appreciated.
With that, Pete, let's go to Hailing Frequencies.
Hailing Frequencies open, sir.
Pete, we head to our Twitter poll about this episode. Now, Pete, I know we kind of... I tangentially discussed this last week, but I was like, all right, I am sure, and this is not a neutral zone incursion on my part, I'm sure that there are people who look for hashtag Star Trek Lower Decks on Wednesdays, and they're like, oh, I'm gonna go crap on a poll because I don't like, you know, Alex Kurtzman or whatever. So, Pete, at least for the near term, okay, I'm retiring the 4-3-2-1 poll for Star Trek. What I did instead was the following choices. Emerald Pain, okay, with a green emoji, got 5%. What's in the Box, wink, got 19%. Welcome Back, Tom, with a France flag. It's the best I could do. Paris, there's no Eiffel Tower emoji. Who knew? Got 38.1%. And tied with that, also 38.1%, was Papa Bear emoji. Some tweets in response. First one up was JT Atkins. That's at JTA is me. The show is firing on all thrusters, as Bones would say. Love the bits with how the bridge officers always come back from the dead, though I wouldn't have minded if Shax had thrown in a Tahiti mention since hashtag it's all connected. Ooh, well done, JT. Whoa, and Pete, building on that, you guys, great minds think alike. I swear, we don't read these ahead. James is sagacious. It's at Big Killen on Twitter. So this week's, quote, all connected, close quote, had me pondering if the Coulson-Shax duo revival is a coincidence.
There you go.
Last week was my favorite episode to date, so this week was average. I really wanted more Tom Paris. Pete, James has an interesting point there. To have the Tom Paris conclusion be, and later after this episode, I'm going to go get my plate signed and have a drink with Tom Paris. You know what I would like to see, Pete? That?
We won't see anything with old Robbie Beltran and Chakotay.
Well, Pete, Marina Sirtis used to make fun of CBS All Access and because she would never pay for it. And then guess what? They paid her. So time will tell. We also heard from Spider-Ham Lincoln. That's at TessLC139. This episode had a nice mix of nostalgia, homage, and mystery. We got Shax back with Kayshan staying, Dom Jot with Nausicaans, an ad for Quark's Bar, many DS9 and I'll say VOY, he spelled VOY, I know he means Voyager references, Tom Paris's plate, Klingon acid punk, bad binars, the mistress of the winter constellations, and a cat in a box. Lastly, we heard from AMC, that's Ann Coltonim, who says, Star Trek Lower Decks just keeps getting better every week. Loved they changed the pairs up this week. Mariner and Tendi brought us on a girl's adventure and hit so many references. They need to show us the other plates. Looking forward to listening to the podcast. And here, Pete, Ann is Ann's words on the podcast. Hashtag, it is all connected. So, Pete, how could people be in touch with you to talk about Lower Decks, to share their anticipation for Star Trek Day on September 8th and so forth?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 12,057 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I'm personally on Twitter is looking back lost, do be in touch with the podcast. Comment on FantasticGeek.com. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Gmail, where we are Fantastic Geek as well. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Facebook.com/FantasticGeek, all one word with the P and the H, like it today.
So, Pete, how's this for some time travel? The next time we watch a show for the podcast, it will be September. The next time we podcast, What If? Episode 104 will be the first Saturday in September. And, of course, Lower Decks new this week as well. And this upcoming weekend on September 5th, we'll podcast that as well. So those things to look forward to on the Pop Culture Podcast feed. Of course, if you're just here for Lower Decks, we'll see you next weekend for Lower Decks as well. Ahead of Star Trek Day coverage, I got a little thrown by my calendar there for a second, Pete. Maybe I am time traveling. But of course, Star Trek Day coverage coming to this and our other Star Trek feeds and the Pop Culture Podcast feed and everything else in due course as well. For now, though, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the final word.
Girls trip?
Never fails to take my breath away.
I wish I could kiss her and squeeze her.
Excuse me?